Podcasting worldwide from Vancouver, Canada. Welcome back to the Personal Process Podcast. The show that takes you through the growth, hardship, self-discovery, lessons, and stories of individuals who achieved success in their own personal path. Trust the process.
Bam! We are back with my good friend, Riley Young. Riley is a pre-medical student on the grind to become a doctor. And as we're going to find out, being a pre-med student in Canada is not the easiest of feats. So, you know, as an individual who's also on that path, it is my absolute pleasure to have such an amazing friend and just awesome person on this show. So with that said, Riley, is there anything I missed? Is there anything you'd like to add?
Dude, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm super pumped to be here. I'm excited to sort of discuss the pre-med process and give you a little bit about my story and how I've kind of gone through the whole thing. So, yeah.
Awesome. So, Riley, I mean, let's take it back to, I guess, one of the main starts of the pre-med process. Let's bring it back to high school. Like, what were you thinking then? Did you always want to be a doctor? You know, like, what was going through your brain?
Yeah, so I would say I had like a little bit more of an unconventional start to being a pre-med. I wasn't someone who, you know, grew up and all my life, I'm like, I want to be a doctor. Like, I want to be, you know, like those doctors on TV. I want to be, you know, doing all those surgeries and stuff. So throughout high school, like, I wasn't super involved with a bunch of extracurriculars and I wasn't the person volunteering, you know, 1,000 hours, you know, every week and doing sort of the most in high school. Being a doctor really came as a thought in university for me more seriously. So high school was pretty normal for me. I knew I really liked sciences and those were kind of the classes I did the most well in. So with that, I was kind of like, what path can I really get on here? And I ended up going to Western because they had this medical sciences degree. And I was like, oh, I really like bio. And this is an opportunity for me to sort of explore that more. And then I'll maybe like decide on a career path, you know, once I'm there. So that was sort of how I went through high school.
Yeah. And I mean, did you really know what to do at that time? Like, did you know which program was the best, which program was the one that you needed to get into medical school? Or was it kind of just like, okay, this program sounds okay. Like, what was going through your head?
Totally. Well, that's the thing, right? Is like every university kind of advertises themselves as, you know, we're the guys to get you there. But I think in Canada, at least, like, it really doesn't matter where you go and you know, universities try and draw you with some of their programs. But I think why I ended up going to Western specifically was that they had this medical sciences degree. And what I really liked about that is it allowed me the opportunity to explore sort of all facets of medicine. You know, you get to do like physiology, but you also get to do like medical biophysics and stuff. And I really liked sort of just that comprehensive learning environment. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do this. I like this and I'll figure the rest out, you know, along the way sort of thing. So
for sure. So let's even take it back before we even get into the pre-med process in university. So you live in, you know, the greater Vancouver area, and you moved to Western, which is in London, Ontario, for those of us who don't know. And I didn't know until I looked into it. But you know, it's an interesting process being 18 and moving out to a whole new place, a different province on the other side of the country. So what were some challenges that you faced while you did this? Because I know it seems fun and all that when you're in high school. But once you get there, it's like, wow, this is something I didn't expect. Do you mind taking us through that?
Yeah, totally. So it's funny because my mom really wanted me to go to UBC. She's like, you know, you can stay at home, you can do your 4 years there and then, you know, apply to UBC med school and it'll sort of be this dream come true situation sort of thing. But for me, I really wanted an experience away from home. I like the prospect of, you know, moving my life to the opposite side of the country, so to speak, and you know, having that new experience and you know, making those new friendships and those connections in a totally different place. But along with that, you know, there's challenges too, right? Like, that's a scary experience for an 18-year-old. Thankfully, that wasn't my first sort of long-term experience away from home. I had gone to a, Australia for a 6-week exchange back in grade 9. So I was kind of used to being away from home to some extent for an extended period of time. So it came, I would say, a little bit easier, but nonetheless, as soon as sort of university started, and you know, you get into studying, and this is like a new caliber of learning that, you know, you're not used to in high school. It can definitely take a toll on you, and it's really important to build those connections as fast as possible, because you're going to need support when you're there studying those long days, and school's hard. And so I think just surrounding yourself with like-minded people and people who can be there for you is really important. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be surrounded by some great people there. So I think that really kind of helped me along the way too.
That's huge. And those are two main points that I actually want to dive into. Let's talk about the transition between high school and university. Because I don't know about you, Riley, but I think the transition is just, honestly, I think it's a scam. Like, it's such a big difference. I mean, like, can you take us back to those times, like, where you're in med sci? So I'm assuming you guys took Calc 1 and, you know, like, chemistry, like,
yeah, 100. Yeah, exactly.
Like, tell me what you were feeling, like, in those first weeks. Because I don't know about you, Riley, but in my high school days, just do the homework and then go to class, and then you're pretty much
good.
So tell me about your process and, like, kind of the things that you learned through that transition.
Yeah, so I was someone that, you know, would study the day before an exam in high school and do completely okay. And that worked for me. That was sort of my process, and I got into the groove of just cramming super last minute. And I remember my first university exam. It was first year biology, and I had studied sort of, you know, I gave myself a couple more days. I studied hard, and I got my mark back, and I got an 80 on it, or an 81. And I was like, wow, okay. Like, this university thing is like maybe not that bad. And I was so happy. I remember calling my mom, and I was like, like, I got an 81. Like, this is huge. Like, I'll be fine. And that feeling was pretty short lived, because I remember I had a calc exam not long after, and I just got demolished. And I think I got like a low 60 or something. And I mean, 60. We've all been there, but it was just so heartbreaking. You're like, like, I've studied so much. But for me, coming from high school, like, studying a lot was anything more than that one night I would study before the exam, right? So I think for me, the biggest thing that I had to realize was I was a little bit delusional with the amount of time I thought I actually had to put into these things. And because I wasn't that person who studied really hard in high school, and I didn't, you know, set myself up for success. So I think the biggest thing I learned coming into first year and having that, you know, sort of big transition to a more rigorous learning environment was that, you know, you got to dedicate your time right, because at university, like, frankly, you don't have a lot of time, and you got to be very sort of efficient. And I remember using the Apple Calendar app for the first time in university, and I was like, this is going to be a lifesaver. And, you know, I would sort of put all my things in my calendar, and that really set me up just from the get-go. And then just, you know, sort of dedicating your time and meeting those people that are like-minded and will push you to work harder and succeed together. I think that those are sort of the big things that eventually sort of got me up to speed, but that was a long process. I'd be lying if I said, you know, the next exam I got a 95 on and was happy, and that was, you know, the fairy tale ending. But it took quite frankly, like, I mean, I'm still not perfect. I'm still learning and learning how to learn, but I would say, like, for the better part of first year, for sure, it was just very experimental. I would experiment with, you know, cue cards, and then, oh, like, that didn't work super well. And then, like, oh, I'd write down everything, and then, you know, read it to myself. And, you know, you just kind of experiment with different methods, and you really just got to learn what works for you.
Huge.
Huge.
So a couple things I want to dive in deep. I think the first thing I want to talk about is, you know, how to build that support network. The next thing I want to dive into, Riley, is, you know, how to make that efficiency possible, because you need that university, right? For a stable mental health life, for a stable grade life. I don't know, just an overall good time. So before we dive into that, you know, a lot of people go into university and they have these Hollywood movie aspirations where they're going to find their future wife, their future husband, their future, you know, fiance. And they get there and they realize that a lot of people aren't like what they show in the movies, and it's very hard to connect with people. So how did you go about finding that social circle, not only to support you in that social connection way, but to motivate you to pursue excellence in this vigorous and difficult path to medical school in Canada?
Yeah, so I would say I was pretty lucky with my residence for one first year. I, you know, got there on first day and I was immediately sort of surrounded by good people. And I, you know, I could see myself being lifelong friends with these people. And lucky enough, a couple of those guys were in science as well. And they sort of had similar career aspirations. They wanted to pursue something in medicine. And yeah, I think just sort of like putting yourself out there and not being afraid of what's to come is sort of the best advice I can give someone who's, you know, searching, or like deciding like, how do I meet people and how do I build these connections initially? I think it's just, it comes from a place of, you know, being true to yourself and just showing that to other people, and people will come and people will find you, and you'll, you know, make those good relationships, those meaningful relationships. So I was pretty lucky that I had a few of those guys, and we would go study in first year. And that was kind of my core group that I worked with. But I think as you get involved with university and you know, join different organizations and different student clubs and that sort of thing, it's just really endless people to meet. And you know, whether they have similar aspirations in medicine or just, you know, something completely different, you know, you'll find people and yeah, you'll be set up for success.
Man, that's beautiful. I love it. So you already found the people, and the listeners and viewers of this show have got a lot of insight already, but I want to know how you were able to find your efficiency to dominate classes and also, you know, have a fun social life on campus. Because, you know, universities are supposed to be the best years of your life. And, you know, you've had a bit of fun in both aspects with regards to your grades, with regards to your, you know, social life. So tell us about that. I guess what was the moment that you think had the most impact, for the biggest bang for your buck? Let's go about that.
Yeah. So like I said earlier, I think the biggest thing for me was, you know, putting everything into my calendar, whether it be something super small, like, you know, I think it'll take approximately like 45 minutes to cook dinner and eat dinner sort of thing. I think if you can compartmentalize your day as much as possible, it really like keeps you on track and
motivates
really
you.
Help you meet your goals too. Right. So that was something I did. And I found that really started helping me quite quickly on. But I think in terms of like actual learning, I'm someone who really benefits from sort of active recall. And I found this app called Anki. It's like an online cue card app, sort of like Quizlet, for those of you who know that.
But better.
and basically the whole deal with Anki is it does this spaced repetition system where it shows you a card, and if you know it, it'll sort of put it away for a little while. And if you don't know, it'll show you again. And you sort of can classify your cards based on how well you know them. And it will show you that card sort of based on that response. And that really helped me because what I would do is after class, I would make my cue cards for that lecture and study them. And, you know, when you're on the bus, you can just study. And I mean, it sounds kind of over the top, but that's something that really did help me, is just sort of taking like even 15 minutes out of your day to just go over your cards. It's not a lot of time, but over time that adds up. And then by the time it's test day, you don't have to have that 12-hour cram session, you know, that you'd normally need. So I think that was the biggest thing for me that really helped.
Huge. And just to kind of elaborate a little bit. So for those of you who don't know, active recall is a process in which you try to actively recall something in your brain. So for example, it could be seeing a cue card, a question, I don't know, what's the name of Riley's last name? And then you could be like, oh, what is it? And don't look at that screen down there, because it's not going to help. But, you know, it's just trying to get that connection. And research has shown this is one of the best methods, if not the best method, I believe it is the best method, to actually consolidate information, remember it better, and actually utilize that information to other processes and aspects. So that's a huge part. And, you know, Anki is an app that I believe you actually showed me, isn't it? I think so.
Maybe. Hey.
Yeah, maybe. So huge shout out for that one. But, you know, it can be used, like you mentioned, on the bus. It can be used on your phone. It can be used on your computer. It's a little bit hard to get into, but after a little while of using it, it's a lifesaver. Yeah. So, you know, that's huge. We learned about efficiency. We learned about how to make social networks. I guess, tell me about one challenge that you endured in your university experience that you wouldn't have anticipated that you think could help other people. And this is a huge question. So take your time. Let me know. It's a big one.
Oh. Yeah. So I'll tell you one challenge I had. In my fourth year of university, I actually got this pretty bad heart infection, actually.
Wow.
Super random, like super out of the blue. And it was, I remember it was 2 days after homecoming. And I was like, this is what's happening to me, you know, sort of thing. And I remember sitting in the ER and I was writing an essay. I was like, I don't even want to be here. Like, should I just go home? Like sort of thing. Like I kind of walked in with like a little bit of chest pain and I was like, it's probably fine, you know? But my mom, who is a retired cardiac nurse now, she's like, you get your ass to the ER. And so there I was sitting, working on my essay for the night, and I was totally not expecting for something like of this caliber to be happening to me. You know, I like to think I'm a decently healthy guy. I try and go to the gym, you know, a couple times a week and run occasionally. But that was something I dealt with for, I mean, I was in the hospital for around a week, and then the bigger challenge to me was sort of the months coming after that. For the next like 2 months, I found that I was just like super tired all the time. And like, you know, even something like walking to class was something that took a lot out of me. And sort of the reason that was so challenging for me is because, you know, it was right during midterm season. And, you know, in a perfect world, you can do your cue cards for 50 minutes a day and, you know, not feel stressed when it comes exam time. But you do get yourself into situations where it's not as ideal and you do have to sort of pick up the pace and you do have to do, you know, hundreds of cards a day and it feels a little bit overwhelming. And so having that built on where I would just get super tired and wouldn't be able to focus for many hours on end just really sort of presented a big challenge to me. And I kind of had to shift the way I studied and really tried to sort of optimize my process even more. And I found something that really helped me is meditating, actually. That's something I've kind of been doing ever since. And I would wake up in the morning, meditate, and I feel like I would just be more focused during the day. And those sort of fatigue spells that would hit me midday because of this heart issue didn't seem drastically as bad. And because I couldn't have coffee and that sort of thing, it just sort of stressed the importance of, you know, being mindful and being able to handle stress sort of to like a high level. So that was I think a pretty big challenge because it sort of hit me like a shockwave. And for the next 2 months, I kind of had to change up everything. And, you know, I had to stop my volunteering and stuff. So, it was a bit of a bummer, but I think I learned a lot about myself too. I had to develop some different hobbies. I like took to reading and stuff because, you know, I couldn't go out. It was a great learning experience as much as it was, you know, very scary too, but.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I was actually going to, you know, midway while you were speaking, I was going to ask you, how did this experience make you feel? You know, the fatigue afterwards, but then it was interesting, Riley, because you mentioned that, you know, and then I shifted my workflow a different way. A lot of people, that would have been the time that they gave up. They could have been like, you know, I want to do pre-med, but now I'm putting in the hours, but I just physically can't do it.
Totally.
What, I guess, you know, I think it'd be fair to say that a little bit, you were feeling a little bit defeated after, especially being a pre-med. What's change allowed you to just flip the switch and say, hey, I'm gonna, you know, recalibrate and go forward? How did you go about that?
Well, yeah, so I think initially I just wasn't used to not being able to study for these long periods of time. And thankfully, like shortly after, I was having a conversation with a friend, and he was telling me about the Pomodoro technique. Have you heard of that? That study technique?
Yeah.
It's pretty known to fellow pre-meds, but basically a little bit about the Pomodoro technique for those of you who don't know. It basically is studying in short periods with complete focus and then just completely shutting off for like say 5 or 10 minutes, depending on how long you set your intervals. And what that allows you to do is just to focus like very intensely for a short amount of time and then give your mind just like a complete break. And I think they've shown studies or something, or they've done studies that have shown that this is like a very effective method and it works better than just sort of like long bouts of cramming. And I can't agree more. Like that really helped me. And had I not found that, I think I maybe would have felt defeated the entire way through. So that is a technique that I'd highly recommend. I can't recommend it enough. And that really helped me.
Huge.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's just an awesome story because like I mentioned, it's an experience that would have just destroyed some people. You know, it's not like you're getting a cold, you know, it's a serious health problem. And it's not only that, it's like it's causing damage to your long-term goal. Cause you know, the thing that I think a lot of people don't understand about like pre-meds and, you know, people that want to go into medicine, especially in Canada, it's like, it's a long-term commitment. It's like you literally have to, this is something that I was talking with a good friend of mine earlier, and you know, you literally have to put your life on hold. It's like, well, you know, I'd love to, you know, go and meet some people to be in a relationship with, but that's a lot of uncertainty that can have a lot of stress. That can be, you know, a huge time commitment with dates and stuff. Or, you know, I'd love to go work, but I got to go do an MCAT, or I got to do this, or I got to volunteer for 30 hours. And the fact of the matter is, I think in Canada, the competition is like, what is it, like 1 in 10 get admitted to medical school, and that's still like people that are in a high percentile trying to get a high GPA, lots of volunteer, saving the world from Ebola, saving the world from COVID. Like it's just insane now. So to have that challenge hit you and to, you know, flip on that switch and be like, no, I gotta get it, and you know, let's try to figure out some techniques, huge. And that optimism, that optimistic point of view, is I think one thing that I respect about you. And for those of you who don't know Riley, this guy devours like homework. He devours work. His efficiency, I swear, like he finishes 20 pages by the time I finish 5 and he comprehends more. This guy's a beauty. So, you know, that's a huge point that you just hit on. And I think we talked a little about the MCAT. And for those of you who don't know, I'm going to shout out your score.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. This man, I believe it was a 517. Yes.
518, but yeah.
Oh, sheesh. Okay, my bad, man.
So
what is a 518? Is that the 95th percentile?
It kind of changes every couple years or so, but I think it's like 95th or 96th. Yeah.
Okay. So essentially what he's trying to say is he's a huge beauty, and he completely destroyed this MCAT business. So, you know, the MCAT is the Medical College Admissions Test. It is one of the most challenging things in terms of pre-med examinations. So I want to ask you, Riley, what is the secret to success? What is the sauce that people can use to just, you know, get a high percentile like yours? And yeah, what general advice would you have in this regard?
Yeah. So first of all, I want to make a disclaimer and say, that score wasn't something that came easy. I actually wrote the MCAT twice. And the first time I did quite a bit worse. And I think the biggest thing for me was really analyzing what went wrong the first time and where I could improve.
How do you do that?
Yeah. So I think it's just really, sort of thinking back to your overall process that you had going through the exam, whether it's, you know, how much time did you give yourself? What would your study day look like? What other stuff did you have going on? Did you work a full-time job? That sort of thing. And really sort of seeing, you know, could I have done anything better? Or was there anything I had some reservations about? And for me, the first time, it was the CARS score. And for those of you who don't know much about the MCAT, the CARS section is basically like reading comprehension and sort of assesses your like reading and comprehension skills, I would say. But for science students, it's typically somewhat challenging because they give you passages that have nothing to do with science. And so you're reading things about art history and you know,
paint.
Yes. Yeah. And philosophy and stuff that you're totally not exposed to prior. So they're hard. I'm sure you can speak to that as well. At least for me, they didn't come easy to me. And that was sort of my main reasoning on even retaking the MCAT. I was like, yeah, this section was like really low and I think I can do better. And you know, you see people that get really high scores and you know, I want to give myself the best chance. I'm just going to, you know, retake it next year.
Sure.
And in between that time, I think one of the best things that I did to sort of set myself up for success, I should say, was just reaching out to people that I knew that had taken the exam and see what they did, especially people that scored really well, and just sort of, you know, hey man, like, what did you do? What do you think was your biggest key to success? And you know, everybody kind of has like a slightly different answer, and some methods may not work for you and how you learn. But I ended up getting in touch with one of my close friends, and he was sort of, you know, telling me about his process, and he's like, yeah, I found this, you know, really good Excel doc that that has like a bunch of terms, and I memorized all of them, and I felt like super good during my MCAT because it was a very like comprehensive list of terms, and then I also did this cue card deck that was pre-made by someone on Reddit, I think, and you know, I just felt good to go, and I was like, oh, okay, that's great, and he had taken it twice too, so he's like, yeah, like my score just like drastically got bumped up. And after hearing him say that, and, you know, I've had, you know, study experience with him at Western because he went there with me. And so I kind of knew we were similar learners, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to try applying this to myself. And I took that doc and I took that cue card deck, and I'm such a big advocate of cue cards. I love that he was using those, cause I was like, perfect. Like I'm set this Anki deck. And yeah, I kind of followed those pretty strictly and used those almost every day. And I found having that active recall for the MCAT, which is just such a beast in terms of what you need to know, really helped me. And when it came to cars, quite honestly, the biggest advice I can give is just practice a ton. And it may seem futile at first, and you may seem like your score is not getting better, but it will. And it does. Like for example, my friend would do 2 hours of cars every day, which seems like, wow, insanely excessive. And I think he eventually like ran out of resources to use, but he's like, it helped me so much because like every day you're being exposed to these passages that you're not familiar with. And every day it gets like just a little bit easier and your timing gets better and that sort of thing. So, yeah, just practice a ton and the practice tests too are just such a great way to know sort of where you're at. There's a bunch of different test companies out there that make great tests, and yeah, just sort of keeping on track and knowing where you're at with those tests, I think can really set you up for success.
Huge. So switching gears here a bit, we dominated how to thrive on campus, get efficient, find friends, and do well on the MCAT. But there is one barrier left to getting into medical school. Dun, dun, dun. The admissions process. Man, that was such a weird thing to do, but I did it. So that's done. So tell me a little bit about the admissions process, and I guess not too much about the admissions process. You apply and you go in, but I guess what are your thoughts on the way it's conducted, and do you think it should change in any manner? And I guess prefacing this, Riley's actually applied to both Canadian schools as well as US schools. So I think he has a little bit of perspective on the changes between both sides of, well, the border. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing, so just to give you a little backstory about sort of some of the Canadian schools, for the schools in Ontario, at least, you submit this sort of common app with your activities and you write a little description with what you did and your responsibilities and how many hours you had. And and then you have your grades and your MCAT, and that's about it. And you send those off, and some schools will have additional essay questions that they'll ask you to write about, and some won't. That will just be sort of the process, that little common app, and then your grades and MCAT. And then actually for a couple schools, they have this ethics exam called CASPER, which sort of just tests your ethical reasoning and sort of how you respond to those situations. And it's a written computer exam. And that's sort of the process in a nutshell, for at least the Ontario schools. And sort of to compare that to the States, and something I'll get into a little bit more that I really like about the States is it just seems like a little bit more of a holistic process to me.
How so?
And yeah, so the States, they have that common app too. And so you submit, I think 15 activities, and you have all your descriptions for those, which are longer than Ontario schools. And so you get a little more space to sort of explain yourself and what you did and sort of what you took away from those experiences. And then you also have an essay on why you want to be a doctor. And I can't remember the exact length of the essay, but you have sufficient space to sort of explain, you know, how this sort of dream started and why you want to go into medicine and sort of what led you to this moment. And I think that's just such a great thing, because that's something that's not really touched upon in Canada. People don't really see your aspirations or your sort of reasoning on why you want to go into this
profession.
Profession, exactly. And I think that's so important, especially in medicine, is because it's just such a long road, and you just got to be so committed to something like this. And I think not even just to let the schools know that they're getting students that really want this, but just to let the student know that they really want that. I know, like, writing that essay, like, it reminded me, like, of why I wanted to pursue this path. And I mean, I don't know if that sort of hit anybody else like that, but I mean, I sort of had that realization. And so that app gets sent to all the schools you apply to, and you do your like recommendation letters and stuff, and those go to all the schools. But the thing with the States is every single school you apply to comes back to you with essay questions specific to their school. And so I mentioned some schools in Canada do that, but certainly not all. And I think that's sort of the biggest difference between the two, is they all come back to you with essay questions. And I know Duke, for example, they have, I think, 8 or 9 500-word questions. So it is a pretty hefty, it's a pretty hefty task. And they also timestamp when they receive that application in by. So you kind of want to do it as fast as possible, also well. So it's a little bit of a challenge to navigate when you apply to, you know, a ton of schools and you're trying to do all these on a very short notice. But again, like, I applied last summer, and as I was writing all these applications, I was like, like, this is a lot of work and all this stuff. But the thing that sort of kept me going is the fact that I knew that these things were adding a layer to my application that wasn't seen in Canada. Like, they had they knew a lot more about me, I felt, in the States, pre-interview. And that's something I really like, because if you're a pre-med out there who's, you know, not super cookie cutter and doesn't get, you know, good grades in their first year. And like, I was one of those people. I didn't get good grades first year. And so, like, I felt like I really had to explain sort of why I wanted to do this and where my passion comes from, and like explain myself and show that I had something to contribute that wasn't my grades, 'cause that wasn't my strongest thing. And even through the rest of school, you know, I did okay, but my grades were never my strongest suit. And so I really liked that the States gave me an opportunity to sort of explain, like, you know, why am I here? And what do I have to contribute to your school? And I feel like in Canada, at least at some schools, that's maybe lacking a little bit more. And although it'd be more work for the students, I think it'd ultimately benefit them if those schools implemented, like, even just an essay on, like, why you want to go into medicine. And yeah, that's sort of my biggest thing I can say about that.
That's huge. And yeah. I guess, you know, like, I think one other key difference between US and Canada is the fact that I think US per capita basis has a lot more universities and med schools to apply to. So I think,
totally,
you know, they have, you know, pre-meds have a lot more options. I'm not sure about the admittance rate. I think it's 30 to 50%. That's just completely off the dome. But, you know, in Canada, it's just a lot more difficult to find yourself having anything but a number, you know, because even in the description boxes that you're talking about, Riley, for those of you who don't know, I think OMSAS, which is the Ontario-based medical system, has what, 100 characters? Not words.
Yeah, it's very little. It basically comes down to like two short sentences for your activities. And I found myself last year when I applied to the Ontario schools, like I had to take stuff out. And I had to only include sort of certain aspects of my role in certain like volunteering positions that like to the point that it was kind of sort of detrimental to me, because I'm like, oh, I can only talk about like one aspect of this. And they don't even know that I also did this because I don't have space to talk about it. And that Nice was point. That was another thing that I loved about the States is they give you, I think it was like 700 characters for each one. And then for three of them, that's doubled. So they're considered your most meaningful activities, and you get to elaborate even further on like sort of what you learned from them and why they were such a key, like pivotal experience for you. And I think that's great. I think just like having that reflection in there is so important, because you know, if you kind of forget why you're doing these activities, and it sort of loses its purpose in my eyes. And I think the States is just great because it gives you that reflection space. You're like, you know, I did it and I learned this about myself. I learned this about medicine, and I really like that. So
that's huge. And my one question is this: what would you change in addition to, you know, just looking at a holistic application process in Canada that you think would be better? Big question.
I would say almost subconsciously, I felt like there was activities that I almost had to do in university. And I think a great example is that is research. I think if you ask any pre-med the importance of research in applying to med school, I don't think any will sort of discount that. And I think something I would like to change, or I don't know how you'd go about this, but just sort of feeling like you have the ability to sort of do what you're actually passionate about. I know, like for me, for example, I wasn't super interested in doing research, but I got involved and I actually ended up really liking my project. But I know I have a bunch of other friends that did research and just didn't like it, but just kept doing it because they felt like they had to. And I mean, at the end of the day, yes, you're applying to med school, but these are also just years that you're living. And I mean, to do something you're not passionate about for all this time, I mean, some people commit like multiple years into research. I would hope that in the future, sort of there's less pressure. I really don't know the sort of the answer to that, but just feeling like you can really just do what you're passionate about. And, you know, if you want to join a club that is maybe less sort of like cookie cutter, and it's like a little bit more like sort of focused on your interests, you know.
Yeah, something
I think,
like
I think that diversity should be sort of celebrated more. And I really don't have the answer on how to do that. Maybe it's just a pressure you feel just being a pre-med, and maybe sort of it doesn't exist at all, that you know, the sort of notion that you have to do research and all this and all these, you know, you have to join X number of clubs and all this stuff. I think as a pre-med, you sort of are brought up that way. You know, you're like, I'm like not involved enough. I've been part of X organization for 3 years, but this person's in five like separate positions at like this one organization. And, you know, they're doing all this other stuff. I think it becomes a little bit toxic when you just constantly sort of compare yourself to other people.
Sure.
And I think it's just because you're all pre-meds and you're sort of all, you know, fighting for that goal of being a doctor. And I think the biggest piece of advice there is just really just focus on what you're doing, and you know, everybody has their own path. You know, if you're truly passionate about it, you'll get there eventually, and you know, you might not end up at the same place as the person next to you, and that's totally okay. Just keep doing what you're doing and power along, and that passion will take you places.
Wow. I mean, we didn't even get to the one message piece yet.
I guess you just weave that in there. I know. Sorry.
No, that's all good. What are your shout outs, man?
Oh, gosh. Well, shout out to you, first of all, for having me on the show. Super exciting for me to be here with you. And yeah, I mean, shout outs to all the pre-meds out there who are either applying to med school right now during COVID or who are, you know, passionate about medicine and pursuing this path. It's a long path. And my mom always says it's a marathon, not a sprint. And you just got to, you know, have your eyes focused on that ultimate goal and don't get too caught up in sort of these short-term things. Yeah, it's hard. And especially COVID, like, it's totally changed, you know, what this process looks like. And that's a topic for a whole nother conversation, but,
I have to have you back.
Yeah. Gosh, I know. But yeah, just keep working hard and yeah, like I said, you'll get there.
That's huge. So with that, thank you, Riley, for coming on our show. Had a lot of fun talking pre-med to you. And for the listeners and viewers of the Personal Process Podcast, thank you again for watching another episode show, and we'll check you on the next one. Hey everyone, Parham back after another amazing episode with another amazing guest. We hope we added value into your life so you could take the tips from this episode and fuel your process forward. If you enjoyed our episode today and think other friends or family members may also appreciate the lessons that our podcast brings, be sure to share us with them, subscribe, and rate our show so we know how we did. And always remember, trust the process.